Garber Mate, thank you so much for joining me on Upfront. Since the pandemic, various studies have documented record levels of anxiety and depression. The Lancet reported that in 2020, some 53 million cases of major depressive disorder and 76 million cases of anxiety disorders were reported globally. How would you explain the trauma or traumas of this pandemic, from the most obvious forms that include the loss of a loved one to some of the more inconspicuous ones?
Yeah, so yes, the statistics are right that they've been coming in for years. There's also been a rise in substance consumption, alcoholism. There's been a significant rise in domestic violence. More women are suffering the impacts of domestic violence. More babies in Canada have been admitted to hospital wards, emergency wards, with head injuries owing to home violence. Larger numbers of people are committing are considering suicide, young people. So this has been going on since the pandemic's onset. And there are two things going on here. One thing is that one study has shown that the more adversity somebody had experienced in childhood, the worse their reactions to COVID is, emotionally speaking. In other words, what we're talking about here is people have already been traumatized, and then under the stress of the COVID, that trauma is being expressed. And so we've seen that in large numbers. The other thing is, if you look at what drives stress in a society, the commonest factors that are promoting stress, I'm talking about physiological and emotional stress in a human being, are factors such as uncertainty, loss of control, lack of information, and conflict. And all of those have been exacerbated by the COVID crisis. So on the one hand, we have the impact of the virus itself and the threat that it poses to people, the lack of information, the uncertainty imposed by this pandemic. And on the other hand, of course, we have the public health measures that, you know, very, very much debated, but they've isolated people.
You've said that some people who hold extreme anti-vaccine ideologies, you know, I'm talking about the type of people that organize protests or promote conspiracy theories on social media, you say that they often do so out of unresolved trauma and that they're, quote, finding a political outlet for their mistrust and anger. What about trauma in the pandemic makes them seek a political outlet in particular?
Well, in the first place, there was a study just a couple of weeks ago that was published in the British Guardian. I can show it to you. It's right here, published a couple of weeks ago. It said COVID vaccine hesitancy could be linked to childhood trauma. And they looked at a large number of people in the UK, and the people that were most adamant against vaccine were most likely to have been traumatized in childhood. Now, by the way, it doesn't mean that there's no valid arguments against vaccine. It doesn't mean that everybody who's against vaccine is crazy. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that the extreme suspicion and the conspiracy theories on vaccine are often rooted in childhood trauma. So when you were traumatized in childhood, when the authority figures who are supposed to look after you and care for you instead hurt you, you're going to grow up with a lifelong suspicion of these authority figures.
There's a couple of interesting pieces of what you're saying there. I mean, one, the study you're pointing to is about vaccine hesitancy, which in some ways right now we're sort of conflating with the extremist views around conspiracies and these mass protests against vaccines. Whereas vaccine hesitancy seems to be something slightly different, or could be something slightly different. But the other piece of this that I was curious about that you're saying, there are many communities where, you know, the lack of confidence in the medical establishment, the lack of access to the vaccine, all of these are factors, bad experiences with medical personnel, lack of cultural competency, all these things are factors. How do you tease out or disentangle that stuff from this idea that it might be rooted in childhood trauma? The concern being for some, myself included, that we might end up stigmatizing people who might have legitimate concerns about the vaccine, even at the same time that we advocate for vaccines.
Yeah, there's a real danger and an unfortunate tendency that people are getting stigmatized no matter what their opinions are. And I see that as very unfortunate. Now, there's certain communities For example, in Canada, the Indigenous community, who've been very hurt by society, who've been medically hurt by society. It's very notorious in the U.S. how elements of the Black population were experimented upon, cruelly experimented upon in medical studies not that long ago. Why should these people trust the medical establishment? In other words, some people might have very legitimate historical reasons for being very suspicious. And I think we have to respect that. We have to understand that. Mm. We have to be very patient with that. On the other hand, there was an American pastor, a minister, thousands of followers in his podcast in Florida, who says that the vaccine is a plot by the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, and Bill Gates to insert microchips into people's blood circulation to control them. Now, it's not that I wouldn't put it past Bill Gates and the Clintons, but I don't think they have the technology to do it just yet. So this guy is paranoid. I'm convinced that what he's talking about is that as a child, he was controlled by malicious forces. He was abused. He was traumatized. And now he's projecting that trauma suspicion onto the Gates and the Clintons and the medical establishment. So I think there are many, many sources of vaccine hesitancy, of vaccine reluctance, of vaccine paranoia. And I think we have to be very careful about how we talk about these people and how we talk to them, because we can't lump them all in one bag and just dismiss them all as crazies.
Another piece of the story is how politics and personal decisions affect beliefs over how to respond to the pandemic. Vaccines, for example, have driven a wedge between families. Politics have always been divisive, but the question of vaccination is somewhat different because it's a rare instance where the personal is the political for everybody. And yet family and community are especially important given the isolation and loneliness of this pandemic. What advice do you have for people who are at odds with their relatives over these matters?
I would say to people, be very respectful, be very tolerant. Do not take things personally. Allow each person to make that decision, whether to agree with them or not. I'm personally, I'm very much in favor of vaccines. I'm very glad to have received the triple vaccine. I think they saved a lot of lives. But I've learned not to argue with anybody. It's such a highly personal decision. And can we respect each other and live with the consequences of our decisions without getting hostile to one another, to people that actually are very close to us? So I think that's a very important issue, that how we talk to each other and how we listen to each other. And we cannot be coercive about it in our personal lives.
Gabor Maté, thank you so much for joining us on Upfront.
My pleasure.